goes with this is there are actually activities that have been set up at every age, and I've got some information about this if you're interested. Claudia Allen's is similar. There's actually things you can do. Now, let me tell you one of the things that goes with this that anybody could do, and it's so much fun. Do you guys remember in the old days with Sesame Street? Do you remember one of these things is not like the other? Remember that? Okay. One of them, and this is where the brain exercises come in, where you actually help them use their brain at the level. Again, if I said to you, I want to use your brains, write Einstein's theory of relativity, I'm not going to use your brain because you're just going to cut me out. Okay. One of them is simple like this. There's three cats and a dog. Dog. All right. Three cats and a dog. If you say to a, if I say to you guys, which one doesn't, which one's not like the other, you'll say dog. You process it very quickly and you end up with dog. Say that to about a 4 or 5 year old and watch what they'll do. They'll go, the dog doesn't fit, right? You can watch the processing. They got to think through it. Say it to a 1.5 year old. Say it to a 3 year old. And what'll they do? What's their first answer? They can speak. I don't know. Right? Because they're learning. But if you go like this, what's that? No, that's a cat. What's that? That's a cat. What's that? That's a cat. What's this? That's a dog. Which one isn't the same? They'll go, which one isn't the same? They'll go, the doggy. Same thing with the elderly that are demented. This is a wonderful, fun thing to do. Okay? You just make it up yourself. And watch how the different ones, and you want to see them be excited when the ones that are at a lower level pick dog. They're so proud of themselves. Because they got it right. They got it right. We're here in Rochester, let's take the weather. Now let's take Valentine's Day. You take the Rochester. Am I in the wrong town? That's right, I'm in Albany, aren't I? I remember that. I keep waiting for the day that happened. Now I'm done with that. I don't have to worry about it anymore. The weather here in Albany, we're going to do. Let's deal with Valentine's Day. How are you currently using Valentine's Day as a mind-stimulating activity for every single resident in your building? Not by happenstance, but by design. Okay? In the morning, you say to your staff, okay, today I want you to ask 2 residents, I don't care what department you work in, I want you to discuss with 2 residents the neatest Valentine they ever received. I don't care. I'm making that up. Pick something, okay? Talk to 2 residents about how the hard Valentine candy hurt your teeth. You see where I'm heading with this? The maintenance man can go, hey, Sue, did you like Valentine's candy? And she goes, ooh, you go, that was too sweet for you, wasn't it? That darn Valentine's candy, and I move on. It's brain exercises, and we can capture if we want to. If we want to try to get reimbursement, but in truth, what the surveyors are caring about and what I care about is the resident having a good time. This is not difficult. We're so busy with things like alarms, and I don't want to holler at you right now. I'll give you a break and then I'll get you when you come back about alarms. Okay? It's so simple. It's so easy. Who is that person and then write it. Use that as your driver and go with them. Will you be right 100% of the time? No. But you know what? If the family believes you are trying the very best you know how to try, I firmly believe this. I could actually pick the resident up and drop them, bust both of their legs, and the family would go, she meant well. I actually did it, not exactly quite that way, but we had a lady that was very alert walking around the facility, and we did a fire drill, and the door caught her, knocked her down, broke her collarbone. And felt terrible, called the family and went, here's what happened. And we'll pay for everything. And it was our door that clunked her. And we had like no problem at all because we had a very tight relationship with the family. They knew we didn't go, okay, put her in the middle of the doors and then let them slam on her. We didn't do that. Yeah. It works. It's a matter of trust. And can you see how visits to their house will increase the trust? Let me see if I can give you an example. Do you remember the last time, this kind of all cycles back because that's where we were heading with this, is what's important to the resident and how did I find it out? I found it out during the pre-admission visit, one way, best way. Do you remember this? The last time an insurance man came by your house? No, called you up. And he said, I'd like to sell you some insurance I'm sure you don't think you need, and I will need you at my house, at my office, at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. I only have a half hour. Okay? Will you come over? Will you be there? What do you say? Oh, you crazy or what? He calls up and he says, I have got an opportunity that I don't think you can live without. And I'd like to show it to you. And I was wondering, I'd like to bring it over to your house. What time would be good for you? And you go, 1:30 in the morning. And the insurance guy goes, my favorite time. I love 1:30 in the morning. I'll be there. So they show up and they go, oh, these chandeliers. Oh, how do you wash them? They are phenomenal. And then you say you got them from Italy, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Oh, this carpeting. You know, I'm thinking about recarpeting my house, and I think this would work. And, oh, I hope it's not dreadfully expensive. Or that picture. That's you and your sister. It's you and your granddaughter. It's you. Oh, my. That dog. Come here. Come here, sweetie. Right? Half hour, 45 minutes later, you're going, where's the paper? Okay, fine. Yeah, right. All right. Yeah, fine. Right? What do they do? I've believed this as long as I've been around. I taught OB. Gosh, back in the 70s, I taught obstetrics. And I can remember calling my friend, who was a nationwide insurance salesman, to come in and talk to the student nurses about how to listen to what the person's saying to you and how to utilize that to show them you truly care about them. We haven't got it yet. But man, we can get it in a heartbeat. Are you with me? Go out to their house and sit on their couch. Why do you suppose home health nurses never get sued, almost never get sued? Because they became vulnerable by coming into your environment in your house, and you were able to watch them. You were able to watch them. Even if you watched them make a mistake, you were able to watch them. And you realized they didn't go, when they started to make the mistake, they simply made the mistake. Okay? Yeah. I'm not kidding. If at $90... At $90, guys, and it's really not that much because I've inflated all those numbers, okay? What's one alarm cost? $75. It works for over 1,000 interventions. Okay, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll do my thing on alarms, and we'll talk a little bit more about assessment pieces, and we'll be done once more. Was this yours? What did I do with mine? Oh, I put it over here. No, no. Thanks for catching me. I haven't been slugging yourself. How come we're smaller than we used to was? What does this have to say about my ability to keep an audience, huh? Oh, are they? Okay, well, maybe we should wait a little bit then, huh? Don't wait for those with incontinent problems. Okay. We got to put them on a schedule. Okay. Yeah, because a lot of them, they're still, their stuff is here. Yeah, they didn't leave me. They're just in the John line. Okay. I pulled this back up so we can make sure, if I'm not going to touch on something, I'll let you know. But let's grab your handouts for a second. I want to do a little work on those. Okay. If you are going to get rid of restraints and get rid of them forever, you truly need to consider them one more time and make some positive steps in your facility. So let's look. Some of the things I can share with you. Restraint myths. These are myths we've told each other, we've told doctors, we've told families, we told anybody that would listen. Restraints prevent falls and they prevent injury. Is that true? It's false. Now, but how do we utilize that information then? You don't have to be able to read this. I actually don't want you to be able to read it. But over here it says risks without restraints, and the word falls is right there. You are absolutely correct on that. Over here it says risks with restraints. Guess what the first word is? Falls. So I didn't fix that, and then I started. Strangulation, loss of muscle tone, pressure sores, decreased mobility, depression, agitation, down through death. They don't fix the problem they went after. But the problems they create bump into the second one, which is it's our moral responsibility to safeguard our residents from harm by using restraints. Well, you see, I really believe it is our responsibility to safeguard our residents from harm. That's part of what we're about. Why would we try to do that by using things that are dangerous? Okay? If you flip to the next page, I am not a big one for scaring people to death. I mean families. But I do try to do this with you because somehow we're just not getting scared enough to get rid of them. The very first, by the way, restraint death in the state of Ohio was a seatbelt. I've heard several seatbelt deaths. They just keep slipping down until they catch it right about here. Okay? So don't say because it's a seatbelt, it's a lot safer. It's not. But let's look at what are some of the restraint risks and how can you use this information. Death by, there's a whole death by bunch, strangulation, suffocation, broken neck, pneumonia subsequent to chest compression, alrighty, sepsis, and then our old friend burns. Let's look at the physiological impact of restraint use. And the thing I want you to understand is the things with the stars are three QIs. They're the three sentinel events in the QIs. This is 10 years worth of information now that people have been gathering up about us. If you tie somebody up, the likelihood of their getting a pressure sore, even if they're in a low-risk group, increases. Their chance of being dehydrated increases, and their chance of constipation obviously runs right along with the dehydration. So three sentinel events you can make happen. You can make happen with restraints. We don't want to do that. And then we can begin to look at the other ones. The other QM that we're talking about is mobility. How long would it take me to take you today, as you are today, and turn you into a two-person assist by restricting your movement? Days? Give me a week. You know, here's the thing, and I didn't tell you this, and I got to tell you this. When you're talking with families, this is the easiest way to explain this to families. Most of the families understand cataract surgery. How many of you are old like me and you remember when we did cataract surgery on someone? What was our post-op treatment? We laid them in bed with sandbags next to their head for 10 days. True or false? Old nurses? True. 14, sorry. We kept them in bed forever. What we came up with was a beautiful operative site and a dead person. Didn't we? They threw pulmonary emboli. They had all kinds of sequela in terms of infections and pneumonias. Now what happens? They get their cataract out in the morning and they meet their friends for lunch. And they go, oh yes. I say, okay, that's the same thing with restraints. Now, I'm stretching it a little bit and you guys have to learn how to lie and you've been doing pretty good at that today, so you're all set. Because here's what you want to say to them. 20 years ago, when I told you your mother needed to be restrained, I was doing the best I knew how to do. I didn't understand how dangerous they were. But there's been lots of new information and we now understand it's extremely dangerous to tie someone up. And just like if your mother had cataract surgery 20 years ago, I'd have put her in a bed with sandbags. Now I know that's wrong. If I did that to her today, I would be wrong. Because they have them, you know, get them and go to lunch. If I were to use restraints today, with the new knowledge I have, I would be wrong. We need to apologize on behalf of us. But let's talk about families in terms of what we've done to them. And it's because we were dancing to the beat of the wrong drummer. Remember when OBRA first came out in 1990 and it says, stop roping and doping the elderly. Oh, that reminds me. Somebody wanted to ask me to talk about chemical restraints. I've got to write that down. It said, stop roping and doping the elderly. And so what do? We created consent forms. So we went to the family and we said, we use this restraint on your mother, we're liable to kill her. So would you fill this thing out? And it says here, if I kill her, it ain't my fault. Okay, can you fix it? Right? We all had consents for restraints. Let's ask the person that knows the least about it if it's okay to use it. All right? Then, well, about halfway through the 1990s, people like me started making ugly noises, and we thought, oh, man, we better probably get these restraints off of people. So we went right back to the same family member, and we said, we're going to take the restraints off your mother because we think they're really dangerous, but this is a consent for restraint elimination. And if in taking the restraints off of her, she hurts herself, it won't be our fault. So if you could just sign this, true or false? They got whiplash, guys. They got whiplash. And we need to explain to them how they got whiplash and where we're going today. Do you remember earlier I said you're in the worst possible seat because you're in the middle of the change? That's an awful uncomfortable. You're sitting on the fence and your bottom's getting tired. Okay, it's very hard to stay there. Your families will be on your side in a heartbeat, but you gotta explain to them what has been the history. You gotta tell them it wasn't until 1995. I know that's 9 years ago, but it's really yesterday afternoon in the history of information that the FDA began to gather deaths from side rails. 1995. 1990, they said stop roping and doping the elderly. I didn't even consider side rails. Okay? Really? Much. Until 1995. And do you remember 1995 when we got this article? You guys don't remember this. If you were in healthcare at all, you saw this one go over your desk. Oh, I don't have it with me. Someone took it. It's the article from the FDA that tells you how to categorize your side rail deaths. If they stick their head straight through, it would be a number one. If they get caught between the side rail and the mattress, that's a number two. Okay. 1995. So we weren't even capturing data. Okay, but what we're doing is now that we're capturing it, we're going, holy camoly, this isn't cool. I'm sure you have all kinds of articles that you're using with the families and with the staff. This particular one, this is ancient anymore. It's 1997, for God's sake. Stephen Miles has done a lot of work in restraint freedom. How many of you are hooked up to the Kendall Corporation? The reference is actually, I think, on page 5 in your handouts. The Kendall Corporation are the ones that stopped using restraints about 1,000 years ago. All right, 12, 14, something like that. And you can actually call them, and they will, for $5, sell you a bibliography. That's how big it is, of articles that show restraints don't do any good. Restraints don't do any good, and they do harm. This article called Death by Side Rails. Well, that's very nice, and I read it, and it shows a little person stuck in the middle and stuck here and stuck there. But the one picture that really knocked me over was the picture of the little lady who had the ability to get her head up and over top the side rail, and then lost the ability to get her head off, and she laid on top of it until she died. And that was the day I went, okay, I think I got this. Okay, it's dangerous. How many of you use transfer poles? They're actually a transfer pole, goes floor to ceiling, and you can put it wherever they need. I love them because they're separate, they're not hooked fast to the bed, and I can crawl myself up, and I can stand like this. I can think I'm on a subway. Okay? But we say they need their side rails to get up. Try it. Get out of bed and then try to hang on back here. Are you with me? My physical therapy friends, it's the wrong angle. I can do it like this, but I have to be able to turn all the way around, okay, with that dumb side rail. Yeah. So we need to be able to say, by George, there's new information that we need to fly and figure out. Okay, then psychological, and I've been banging on that one all day long. The loss of the dignity. I want to talk to you about loss of dignity. And loss of dignity under psychological is where I get involved with alarms. I think they are the most undignified thing we have going. Well, we got a lot of undignified things, but I think that one's nasty because it screams to the world, something's wrong with me. How many times, if you listen to your residents that are alarmed, you'll have to take them off very quickly and then put in place some of the things we've talked about. Because when you talk to the residents who have alarms on, okay, they don't like them. Do they? They hate them. And they say, I don't know what I did. I don't know what I did to do. I didn't do anything wrong. I don't know. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm being treated like an animal. Oh, yow. That's a killer. How many of your residents used to be strippers? Well, they must have used to been strippers because why in the world would a little lady who wouldn't even undress in front of her spouse for 60 years they were married? She undressed in the closet. They had 12 children. I never could quite figure that part out. Okay? But she dressed and undressed in the closet. She is coming down the hall nude from the waist up because she took this off to leave the alarm behind. True or false? Look at it with your heart, guys. She didn't do that because she was a stripper. She did it because she will go to any lengths to make this thing stop making noise. Now, I know none of you have bought one of these, but this is what I'm talking about when I talk about our desire to find technology that will be the panacea. How about remote screamer alarms? Remember I talked to you this morning about screaming. Stop screaming at our residents. Well, do you know there are remote screamers out there? And if you got a lot of money, they're only $350. And what they are is this little unit that you can record into it. It goes like this. Sit down! You record that right in there, okay? And then every time the person moves, they're wonderful. A disembodied voice hollers at them. Had a lady that had one on, and they said, it's working like a charm. She doesn't move. So I went into her and I said, what is this thing? And I tapped the mat that she's sitting on. And she said, I don't know. She said, I can't move at all. She said, because every time I move, my butt hollers at me. Wow, what a way to, quality care! I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. You guys, some of you are so non-compliant, you probably would get undressed right here in this group to walk out. I saw how you were. Okay? Yeah. Wow. Loss of dignity. I'm going to try to see if I can make sense out of that. In this country, bodily noises are not acceptable. Except for men and boys. For the rest of us, how many of you are watching Big Fat Obnoxious Fiancé besides me? I can't help it. I love that stupid thing. I hate Survivor. I hate all those other ones. But I love that guy. He is wonderful. Burps all the time. Oh, God, he's awful. Scratches and stuff. Yow. Okay. But his whole family burps, so it's okay. But anyway, it's not acceptable. I heard, however, that if you go to Italy, and you have a really good meal, you're supposed to burp really loudly because that's like a compliment in that country. So last night they took me to Bocca di Pepe, and I tried it, and then they asked me to leave. Bodily noises are not acceptable. Why would we do this to someone we say we are trying to treat with respect? If they worked, it might be a different story. They don't work. And guess who knows better than you that they don't work? The nurse's aides. How long would you return to a job where you knew what you're doing was useless? You're doing ice pitchers and nobody's drinking out of them. Okay? You're putting these alarms on and every time somebody falls, you get hollered at. Didn't you hear the alarm? Yeah, I did. By the way, speaking of alarms, do you know which hour in your orientation for your staff you deal with this issue? What's your name? Kathy. Kathy is a nursing assistant here with us, and she has been told, what's your name? Anna. When you take Anna to the bathroom, don't you dare leave her alone. She's a terrible fall risk. You must stay with her at all times. Kathy's got it? Got it. But she's also responsible for Beth. Beth has an alarm on. Okay? I want to know, where did you explain to Kathy how to handle this ethical dilemma? She is in the bathroom with Anna, and she hears the alarm. And since anybody with a brain would only ever use one alarm in a unit at any time, it'd be stupid to have more than one alarm if they can't figure out which it was. Of course, we knew that. So you only got one alarm on the unit, and Kathy knows it's Beth. How have you explained to her to handle this ethical dilemma? Should she leave Anna and run out here? Should she stay with Anna and let Beth fall? Because we don't have a real good team supporting us here, usually. Alrighty? And what's going to happen? She makes the decision to stay with Anna. Stays with her and everything's fine. And she comes out and here's the nurse and the therapist and everybody. And they're all huddled around Beth, who fell. And the charge nurse looks at her and went, didn't you hear the alarm? And Kathy goes, yes, I did. She goes, well, she's on the floor now, you know. She's trying to explain. I was trying to be with... How many more days would you guys return to work? Very seriously. What are we going to do? We keep beating our chest because people don't want to work with us. I understand why. Right? I understand why. We don't teach them how to deal with this. They can tell you, and I have seen aid after aid, when they hear an alarm, they take off as fast as they can run. And our halls are too long. I can't get there before she's on the floor. If she's a fast mover, I can't get there. Okay. I was in a facility with my same facility where my little lady was in the bed over here. And we're standing around. And what's another one of the things we always get mad at the staff for? The alarm goes off and they don't respond. Why bother? Why bother? She's got to be on the floor. I'll go slowly. Why bother? She never falls out. So we're standing there and the alarm goes off. And nobody moves. And I'm standing there. I said, aren't we supposed to do something when that alarm goes off? Oh, they said, that's just Mabel. And she's just rolling over. I said, $350 you spent to know that she's... Buy one of these $5,000 beds. It'll tell you she's rolling over. Whoopee! Okay? I said, but aren't we worried she's going to roll out of the bed? Nah. They said she never rolls out of the bed. I guess she just likes to make noise. At this point, I can't figure out why we have an alarm on her. I said, come on, I think we ought to go. So we went down to the lady's room. And I want you to listen to this. She's an African-American lady. She's laying on her side, facing the bed, and she's clutching the call light in her hand. And she's crying. And the supervisor said, Mabel, what's the matter? And she said, nothing. I just tried to turn over, and there's that noise again. I'm sorry I bothered you. Okay. And the supervisor said to her, what you got in your hand? She looked at it, and she went, I don't know what this is, but if I could figure out how to use it, I think I could make that noise stop. Wow. It just, my heart just falls to my feet every time I get involved in one of those situations. And I don't do anything weird. I simply walk in the facilities is what happens to me. Okay? Why would you do that to another human being? Give them a piece of equipment that they don't know how to use, and then give them another piece of equipment that when they try to turn over in their bed makes noise and embarrasses the heck out of them. No, it doesn't make sense. Okay? You need to get rid of alarms. How are you going to do it? Strategy. Very simple. New rule. Never, ever again will you take an order for one. Or put one on. Do you need an order form in the first place? Of course not. So you'll never put one on. How about this? There is a rule that says, if you as a nurse think you have to put an alarm on somebody, you must call, and then the person they have to call is somebody who acts and feels a lot like I do about the use of them. Maybe it's a DON. Maybe it's the administrator. I was working with a group in Texas, and the administrator, he did a beautiful job. He got rid of restraints, and then he went back to get rid of alarms, lap buddies, and seat belts, and wheelchairs. And what he said to the staff, he's a very meek and mild gentleman, and he said, you may not apply any of those things or get an order for any of those things until you call me. He said, I carry my cell phone all the time. I go to Louisiana on vacation. I will be always available to you. If you cannot reach me, you will wait until you get a hold of me before you make any of those decisions. How many seat belts, alarms do you think they actually had in the building? I got to call him. And he said, when you call me, I will ask you, what's your rationale? What's your assessment? What else have you tried? You know, he would put them through the hoops. So I find it real hard to accept when people say, well, when I got to work on Monday, the nurses over the weekend had done this and this and this. They don't work autonomously. They're part of your group. That is not acceptable. I'm sorry. That is not acceptable. And I say to them, if you want to call me and you want to talk over the different options you're thinking about, I'll talk to you any day of the night or any night of the week. But if you want to call me and go, well, she's up again. What are you going to do about it? I will hang up on you. Now, I have a friend who's smarter than me. Here's what she does. I love this from a management standpoint. The staff would call and go, well, I don't know what to do. What should I do? He won't let me use a restraint. And she said, you know, you're absolutely right on that. She said, why don't you go ahead and punch out. I'm awake now. I'll come on over to the facility and I'll take the rest of your shift. Because I understand it was tough making that decision. If you need me to make that decision, I can make it for you. So why don't you go ahead and punch out? I'll be there in 10 minutes. How often did she have to say that until they stopped calling with stupid questions? Okay. Empower them to think. We need to give them education. Okay? But don't say think for yourself and then make all their decisions for them. But if you really want to get rid of them, you will, nobody can put another alarm in place. Nobody. Without talking to somebody who's going to really put them through their paces. And what you're going to ask is, tell me four other alternatives you think might work. And how have you tried each one of them? I see so many. I was with a facility not too long ago. Every single resident that comes in has an alarm put on them. The money they're spending on alarms. Do you guys know how much money you spent on alarms last year? Ask your inventory person. Check with your budget people. I was working with one place in between January, February, and March. In 3 months, they had spent $10,000 on alarms. Okay, that's insane. Hire another employee. That just doesn't make sense. And what happens to the alarms? They get stepped on, they get broken, they get lost. Right? Because people don't like them. Ice cream hardly ever gets lost. Okay? I truly hate them. And I really believe it's another one, it's an example of us trying to find the panacea. It's back to, as I mentioned before, the immediate jeopardies. I don't know if this is true or not in New York. A lot of the immediate jeopardies are you put the alarm off, the resident took it off. Put it on, took it off, put it on, took it off, killed, hurt themselves. And then we get cited for immediate jeopardy and we go, mean surveyor. I don't know. I don't think it's such a mean surveyor. Okay. We have all the rest of the psychological things. One of the things that's interesting psychologically about people who are restrained, and I bet you guys have stories that would support this, as we were really in the hot and heavy restraint freedom mode, what we found is when we released restraints from someone, two things started to happen. They became continent and they began speaking. Doesn't make any sense. They were just as demented as they were before. But what happened? Because we were focusing on them, and they said, I gotta go to the bathroom. Guess what? We took them. Okay? And they began to realize that, again, their words meant something. I think I would become nonverbal. How long could you go, please don't do this, please don't, please don't, please don't, please don't, please don't, until you finally just check out. You break their spirit. You heard what I said at the end of my introduction, which I believe teachers don't teach. They set up an environment where learners ask to learn. And I stole that. I tell you, I steal everything. But you know where that's stolen from? The horse whisperer, Monty Roberts. The actual horse trainer that story was written about. His name is Monty Roberts. He does a real humane kind of horse training approach. And that's his phrase. I do not train horses. I set up an environment where the horse asks to learn. And it's absolutely phenomenal to watch him. His father used to break horses, okay, and he said no. Monty has actually got a book out now about how to use his theory with people, troubled people, how to help them rather than trying to break their spirit. It's really kind of interesting if you get a chance. But that's what goes through my mind. We don't want to break them, and that's what we've been doing. We've been breaking them so they become compliant and don't cause us trouble. No. Okay. Loss of will to live. Grab the next page and take a read on that. My children are coming today. How many of you have or have had teenage children in your household? I know then, because you're caring, warm people, that you never, ever allowed those teenagers to drive, did you? No, of course you wouldn't, because we know the single biggest killer of teenagers is automobile accidents. So you would never allow anyone that you say you love to drive. No, of course not. Not if you're the kind who's tying folks up to keep them. And you say, Dan, you need to get this together. The thing you don't seem to understand is I tried to put my teenager in the basement, okay? But every time I try to feed him some food, then they would try to sneak out. And sometimes their friends actually knocked in the basement window so they could escape at night, right, to go driving. And then you would say to me, and by the way, Diana, life worth having has risks. Okay. The elderly are saying nothing more than that. I love sayings, but now I've lost it. I love sayings, okay? Strategy. Ask your staff to bring in sayings, to bring in things that they feel exemplify why you guys want to be restraint-free. This, I love it. It says, life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing. You know who said that? Helen Keller. Now, if there's one person that needed to be tied up, it was her. She can't see, she can't hear, she can't speak, she falls all over the place. Right? She was a mess. I saw the movie. Actually played her mother once. That was real interesting. But at any rate, yeah. Why? What do we do with Helen Keller? We hold her up. in our culture is an example, right? Of someone with stick-to-itiveness, with guts, with... We got them in our facility, guys. Have we broken their spirit so they're no longer able to say this to us? As we want to talk with the staff, that's the kind of thing you want to say. Alrighty? Now, strategy-wise, where did I go with them? Couple times what we did was actually put together a button contest. And you could do this with falls. You can also do this with restraints. These happen to be with restraints. It says, I'm not fit to be tied. And this one says, life's too short to be tied down, restraint freedom. There was a button contest among the staff. Whoever dreamed this up got, like, you know, $20 gift certificate at some local restaurant that you begged and got free. But everybody had to wear one of these. We wore one of these at work. Just like we wear the ribbons for breast cancer and, you know, the AIDS ribbons. There's all kinds of things where we tell people what we relieve by what we wear. But in order to get this thing, you had to fill out a pledge that says, I commit to support a restraint-free environment at community nursing home for the safety and quality of life of our residents. I understand the need to maintain a positive, supportive attitude when family concerns arise regarding the restraint-free goal. I will perform my job in such a way that I will monitor all residents to maintain a safe environment. I understand it's up to me to guarantee we meet our goal of restraint-free facility. They became card carriers. Okay? Speaking of card carriers, your nursing assistants all carry business cards, don't they? This is that practice lying part. Yes, you say. Why not? Why not? At the cost of business cards today, what's a sheet is what, a buck in the computer? You want to show them you care about them, and you want them to become a card carrier. On the back of the card is your mission statement. And it doesn't just say quality of care. It says freedom from restraints. It says freedom from pain. And you've taught them how to speak about that, or you will by the time they get out into the big world, right? And you hand them their 10, 20 business cards the first day they show up to work with you. And it doesn't just say to whom it may concern, okay? It's actually got their name on it. Does this make sense? I want to buy their commitment to my goal. I don't want them going, well, I'll tell you what, we got some stupid rule, we don't use restraints, we're killing everybody at our place. I don't want that to occur. I got to explain to them that they've got to be part of the solution. They're already part of the problem. They've got to be part of the solution. This kind of thing is fun. You can have a lot of fun with this restraint freedom movement. We can do the same thing with falls. We'll pick that up in just a second. Okay? Flip the page over, and it says facility assessment evaluation of restraints. First question, have you formulated and committed to paper a philosophy that says you're going to be restraint-free? We've been talking about that. How does the management team demonstrate their support of the restraint-free philosophy? Directors of nursing, if you have a resident's family who brings a resident to you and says, I want a restrained manner, I'm suing you, do you have the administrative support you need to say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, we don't have an empty bed. I don't know how that happened. I thought we did, yes, but it's gone now. And it's going to be gone as long as you stand here. What about the family that comes to you and says, I have 6 other lawsuits going, your facility 7, give it a shot. Do you have administrative support to go, oh, no beds? Sorry. Unless you have the ability to deny admission when necessary, tell me, you know, and that this fits in here. You've got nothing to lean on. You don't need an administrator when you say, I'm sorry, we cannot use restraints. You don't need an administrator when they go crying to that person to go, well, in this case, let's do it, okay? No. Okay. There's more to that, though. I want every department head to be on board. I want us at department head meetings to talk about, if I came to one of your department head meetings and I said to them, how many restraints do you have in the building? Would I hear one voice answer? And I should, because we want them gone. We got them now. I'm not going to take them all away until I get a plan in place, okay? But I want everybody to go, wow, we got 3, man. We're working so hard on that. We've got Beth down to just, she's just got 1 in the afternoon. Can you think of anything we can do about that? That's the maintenance man talking. Alrighty? Same thing with falls. If I went to your department heads and said, how many falls did you have last week? I want them to be able to say 2. Darn it. And one of them was Harry, who tripped over his shoelaces. I think we need to get him some slip-on shoes. That's the housekeeper talking. Okay? Because they're social issues. How many of you have fallen down No, you've all fallen down. How many of you have fallen down due to a medical problem, and how many of you fell down because of a social issue? Like icy street. Like dog in the road. Like shoe untied. Like mine, last week I'm going down the ramp to get on an airplane, and the carpet was flipped up. Ouch, that hurt. Okay? I mean, I had two big ugly knees, I had a weird ankle, and the person with the airline went, "You okay?" I went, "Hurt you." Okay? Yeah, no, I'm not okay. But I don't have a medical, does that make sense? The lady from the airport could have helped me. I didn't need a nurse to check my meds. I fell down because I tripped over the thing, Matt. Okay? Is the restraint freedom philosophy, and we can expand that to say the falls mitigation philosophy shared during pre-admission. Do you, in your pre-admission, what do you call that? In your resident packet, handbook, that's what I'm trying to say. Does it say in there, and I'm talking verbatim, does it say in there, at our facility, folks sometimes fall? I want it in there. I want it in there. Stop promising something you can't do. Does it say, sometimes untoward things occur at our building, like illness, falls, terminal illness, death? And what we guarantee, and I'm not a big guarantee person, but what we guarantee is when one of those untoward events occurs, our staff will respond effectively and efficiently and use the latest techniques. Does it say that? That is your guarantee. We can't stop it from happening. My friend Bob in the back was talking to me at break, and he said, "You know what?" He said, "You mentioned ice for pain, but there's some other stuff out there." And he began to tell me about some very interesting new stuff that even I don't know about. I see it as my responsibility to learn more about it. I can accept it, I can reject it, but I need to learn about it. Okay? Does that make sense? How, then this takes me to the next point, which is this one. How many volumes do you have in your reference library in your facility? 100, 200, 300? How many different books is what I'm actually asking? You see, in the library. How many books are in your library? Oh, I know. No. See, I was being old-fashioned there. You don't have a library. What you actually have are several computer terminals that are available to the staff 24/7 where they can go on to Google and put in BPPV, right? Sure, that's what we're using for reference these days. I forgot. Why is it that that hospitals have librarians? Well, we have one reference book. It's in the bottom shelf of the staff developer's drawer, and it's from 1965 when she graduated from school. There are all kinds of advances going on in our world. It's almost impossible to keep it together. You need to, you know, you can work as a team back and forth, but we have no reference material. I can tell you why we don't have any tubes so the staff. Does anybody have a computer that is designated for the staff to get on to learn information? Look around the room, guys. Super. Thanks, sir. How must it cost you millions of dollars, huh? Millions and millions. He's probably one of those not-for-profits that got donated, right? Oh, for heaven's sakes. Okay. Somebody said to me the other day, "Well, they're expensive." I went, "I'll pay the $500. I'll buy you a Dell." Right? Are you with me? We got an internet hookup because of the MDS, right? Why can't we have a reference material? I'll tell you why. It's because back to that trust thing. Hard for us to trust our staff. They're liable to play solitaire on it. What if they look up a PORN site? Wow. You're allowed to take care of other people's lives, but for God's sakes, I will not allow you to look up about BPPV. And I said that twice. Do you guys know what that is? This is another thing. Bob, do you know what that is? Have you bumped into BPPV? Do you know what it is? Shake your head yes. Physical therapists are supposed to know. Okay? BPPV. I gotta write it someplace, but I'm running out of space. Somebody wrote on every page up here. I don't know. BPPV. It stands for benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. Put BPPV in Google and it'll come up. I am not a therapist. this is really a physical therapist thing, but my little meager understanding goes like this. Anybody in here ever had an inner ear infection? Do you know how dizzy you get? Oh, jeez. I've never been so dizzy in my whole life. It's awful. In your inner ear, there are a bunch of little hair things, you know, little hair things in there. And as you get older, those little hair things start to bust off. And as they bust off, they start to float around and crash into all the little hairs. When they crash into the other little hairs, what do you end up with? Vertigo. Right. Well, yeah, that all makes sense to me. My mother-in-law had, when she'd come to our house, she had terrible episodes of vertigo, and she would come to our house, and we would go to, because we do theater, so she would come to the show, and she would sit toward the front, because she can't hear very well, so she'd sit like this, watch the play, then we go out to eat, so we're eating at like midnight, 1 o'clock, then we go over to our house, and by the next morning, she couldn't get down the stairs without sitting down. She'd be so, so dizzy. First she blamed the show, then she blamed her seat, then she blamed, and she wasn't far off, unfortunately, then she blamed eating late, okay? Her daughter at that time was living in California. My sister-in-law said, well, I think we ought to do that shakes therapy with mother. And those California people are strange. And I said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, she said there's something where you hold them upside down, shake them or something. I don't know. She got back here, the sister-in-law came back here, and mom was really not doing well. She was having lots of problems. And she said, let's check it out. So they took her to a physical therapist. The test for it, what they actually do is to see by moving their head, can you make them dizzy? It's paroxysmal because it depends on where those little hairs, where those little things are floating. It's not consistent. It's benign because it's not a growth kind of thing. It's positional because it depends on where the head is, and it's vertigo. All right. She was eating Anavert like candy because she was just a mess. So we take her to the therapist who moves her head and can make her very, very dizzy. The treatment is all non-invasive. The treatment is to move her head, and what the logic is to get these little floaty hairs caught down in the middle of the cochlea so that they can't fly loose. It's like a miracle. I mean, it works like a miracle. Okay? Now, she's fallen a couple other times. One, I was right with her. Queen of Falls over here. I'm right with her. We're looking at a house for this sister who's coming back to our part of the state. And mom is over there. I'm right here. We're not quite arm's length apart. We're a little more than that. And I'm in the sunken dining room. See where this is going? And she's got glaucoma and macular degeneration, and she's walking toward me, and I see her miss the step. Okay? I reach, and she falls backwards. Guess what immediately started to happen? Ooh. Okay, all the little hairs got loose. And she bonked her head and some other stuff. Okay, but she was all right. I suggest that if you've got somebody who's falling and you can't seem to figure anything out, okay, I call my therapist and go, can we check this out and see if it's BPPV? Because if it is, the treatment is very easy to do. If it isn't, we can at least say to the surveyors, we have looked at BPPV. We've looked at other medical issues like meds. All part of showing that I'm a really, really smart person. But where did I learn about BPPV? If you go on the internet and you type in falls, if you go on the internet and type in clock test, if you go on the internet and type in assessment for cognition, okay, if you go on the internet and type in list, what's that thing called, Bob? LISS. It's a, do it. Tell this much about that. That's too much for me. I love it. And they contend that it has something to do with reducing pain, increasing cognition. I look it up. I can look it up and understand so I can at least have a conversation with him. Does that make sense? Where is your nurse's reference? I bought Dr. Courtney Leiter. I'm nuts about this guy. I bought his book. He's a pressure sore dude. I bought his book. Said to the nurses, there are 6 pages here I want you to read. 2 months later, they all didn't have it read. It wasn't the DON in the building, okay? That's unconscionable. I said, why didn't you read it? I didn't have time. Why didn't you take it home? I'm not doing work stuff at home. Why didn't you read it on your break? I'm not doing work stuff at break. If you want me to read it, why don't you make me a copy and put it in my paycheck? Why didn't you read it? So, okay. Why don't you go find a different job, you nut? Okay. In your resident care handbook, you've told them, our guarantee is we're on top of it, man. We know the latest, and we even try some weird stuff. We even try some weird stuff here. Alrighty? What else is in there is you have explained to them that you are going to call them incessantly with bad news. with as many falls as some of our residents have, I think you need to go like this. Stay on hold, she's gonna fall again pretty soon. Do they understand why you're constantly calling them? If you say, because the state says I have to, stop saying that. You're calling them because you want to keep them as part of a partnership in the care world, that what you're doing with them, right? But you also want them to give you input. Try this. Oh, where did I put it? This is like too cool. Family involvement. Friend of mine, mother, very demented, with lots of combative behaviors. Kept getting moved from facility to facility. As I look back now, I think her problem was lousy pain management. But anyway, she was always hurting people. So we go to a new facility. And I said to my friend, to help the facility, can you make just a little tiny list of the kinds of things I could do, you know, that would make your mad mom mad? Because I would rather not do them. Look at this. Is this gold or is this gold? Okay. She writes things like this. Listen to this. Touching or grabbing her butt or her breast. My father used to do this in public. She hated it. Invading her body space. Touching her when and where she doesn't want to be touched. Think about simple things we do. Let's not even go to bathing. Let's go to walking down the hall. Okay? And you got a gait belt on her. Let's go to putting your arm around her. Without knowing this, I don't know how you'd keep from getting socked because you're trying to help her. Startling her, coming up from behind her on her right side. She is deaf in her right ear. Always approach her slowly from the left front. Okay, this lady is a, well, to be nice, she's a tree hugger. Okay, she's into a lot of alternative kind of things. She's a real Greenpeace person. She doesn't have a health background at all. She's talking about our mother as a person. When you take her hands, take one. Not both. She's frightened when you're holding both of her hands. Men's voices, ignoring her, laughing where she can hear it. I mean, she's got all this kind of stuff. But listen to number 27. My grandmother used to tie my mother to a clothesline as a child to prevent her from wandering away in search of other children to play with. Mother was an only child for 10 years and she was lonely. Her only companion in the immediate neighborhood was her dog, Tippy. Please do not restrain her. This facility badgered my friend to allow them to restrain this lady at every turn, at least once a week. I think it's because they filed that and forgot to read it. Okay? Let me tell you a little bit more about this lady. Here was her problem. She was agitated. We weren't dealing with that at all. She'd get up in the morning and she'd walk, 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 and by 3 p.m, she's like this. And walking into things. Boink. She'd walk into, she was a terrible risk. The behavior that she had engaged in that made them believe she really needed to be restrained for sure was this one. She crawled up onto a chair, and then she crawled up onto a nurse's station, and then she crawled over the nurse's station onto the counter, and then she crawled onto a chair, and then she crawled onto the floor. Okay? They need to restrain her. Try to restrain that lady. Okay? They did. So she knocked the chair over. She hit her head on the thing going down. I mean, it just went from bad to are you kidding? If a lady has the ability to climb up over the nurse's station, I don't think we have a mobility problem here. Okay? So I said to the daughter, maybe the problem with the facility is they don't understand enough about your mother. And since she can no longer speak, why don't you tell them what she likes to see, smell, taste, touch, and hear? Think about the family members you have and tell me who wouldn't spend some time doing this if they actually believed you were going to use this information. This is their chance to be part of the care team without taking the responsibility of the care of their loved one, right? That's what they want to ditch. I want to ditch the responsibility. I want to ditch having to worry about this 24 hours a day. But I want to be part of her care, but I don't know how. This is a beautiful way. Okay, so I said, see, smell, taste, touch, and hear. And the daughter writes, animals, particularly baby animals, kittens and puppies, use the cat and dog books I brought her. Ouch. Okay. She had two cats. Show her the pictures of her cats. Baby small children. Sounds. Big band music. Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman, Jimmy Dorsey. Use the CDs and the CD player I brought her. Soft classical instrumental music or hymns, especially piano music. She used to play the piano. Do you see where I'm going with this when I start talking about 1,000? I mean, I got enough stuff on these two pages. Smells. bakeries, lilacs, whatever. Taste. Get this one. Mashed potatoes and chocolate cake at the same time. But if it works, it works. Okay? Yeah. Jif peanut butter on rye bread. I mean, she really tried the very best she knew how to give us so much good stuff. All right. Touch. Rubbing her back, stroking her hair. And I would watch the daughter do that to her when we would visit. It would be really interesting. And her mom would fall asleep. Hold one hand, not both. Petting a cat or a dog, soft fabrics. She used to be a cheerleader. She just gave us, I mean, the thing just goes on and on and on. How many of your families would be totally excited to do this? I think most of them. Because I want to be involved, but I can't handle the responsibility anymore. Okay? So where in your handbook did you tell me you're going to ask me to be involved in the care from the standpoint of let me know who my loved one was? Okay? Yeah. That's in the handbook. And so therefore, in the handbook it says, and when anything occurs, good or bad, we'll call you. So now I have another question for you. Last week up until today, how many times has a staff member on your team called a family member with a hunk of good news? What's your expectation on that one? Yeah, all week. What?
It doesn't happen.
All we call with is bad news. So what have we done? We've sensitized them to any time the phone rings and I go, hi, this is Diana from Happy Acres. It's bad news. Try this. Customer service and staff retention, it also helps those two. Say to the staff, and I'm talking direct care staff here, pick one resident a week. I want you to call their loved one or see their daughter when she comes in with a hunk of good news. And we're not talking big stuff here. We're talking this one. You know what? Yesterday I was dancing with your mom, and she said I loved you, and she hasn't spoken for, well, as long as I've worked here, that's 3 years. I just thought you'd like to hear that. That's all. HIPAA be damned. I can leave that message. Your mother smiled and said, I love you. I can leave it on answering machine and let the HIPAA police get me. We just spend so much time on silly things. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. So now when the aide calls to say, by the way, I was with your mom and she tripped over her shoelace, it makes a lot more sense. Yes or no? Make a rule. You will call with a hunk of good news. Somebody will call with a hunk of good news. You don't have to call every resident's family every week. Make yourself some sort of a schedule and decide who's going to do what. It can be nurses, it can be maintenance, it can be housekeeping, but it's usually social stuff. Usually social stuff. A lot of fun. And then we really become partners in this care. If I can drop one more thing on the floor, I think I will. Okay. Do you utilize your restraint-free philosophy and your falls is a social issue philosophy during the hiring process? I come to you, I'm a nurse, you're down 3 nurses. And you say to me, tell me the last time when you were working nights and you had a resident who kept getting up in the middle of the night, what'd you do? And I said, well, I'm telling you this, I put a restraint on him. I'm not putting up with that foolishness, okay? Do I get a job at your place?
No.
Ask the question. Make sure you know my philosophy. What do you believe is the best intervention for, tell me a resident that was falling. You know how to interview people, but tell me a story. Don't say, do you believe in not letting people fall? And then they go, yeah, I don't think, oh, heavens. So you say, tell me a time when you were working with somebody that was a faller and tell me the weirdest, wildest intervention you ever used. And they went, well, we used a screamer alarm and it worked fine. If that's the best you think, then maybe you don't belong in our facility. What do you do with it from an orientation standpoint? How do you tell me? How do you include me in terms of what you want to know about the resident so you can work with that? Does the facility meet with the families and responsible parties to give them information about restraint use or lack thereof and or this whole falls business? When was the last time you held a family meeting to talk about the issue of falls? That was right after the one you held on the QM for restraints, wasn't it? Yeah, because you wanted to make sure they understood how to read the paper when it came out. Alrighty. And they also understand their role in falls. Okay, it just keeps going and does a definition and all those sort of things. And you never, ever, here's another rule on restraints. You never, ever, 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 if you believe a restraint has to be used and you're actually able to convince the administrator, whoever you have to call, you never would put that on until everybody has done their assessment. Right? That's activity, social work, dietary, PT, OT, which means you don't take an admission on Friday night and then tie them up Saturday morning. You got to get PT and OT in over the weekend. It's hard for people to understand that we don't do this just for the money when we make moves like that. Is there a systematic process of evaluation and care planning prior to and during at least monthly restraint usage, or maybe monthly if I've got a lot of problems with falls? I want to talk to you a little bit about your care plans. Yeah, I got time. I want to talk to you about your care plans. How many? This is what I do when I go into facilities, and you might want to do this. I take, very carefully, I take the care plan out of the plastic covering, very carefully, like this. Then I put it on the floor like that, and then I walk on it. And people say, what are you doing? I said, trying to make it look like we use it. Is our surveyor friend still with us? Oh, shit.